Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Fluffy bread, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real, but Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, zero sugar, and seriously great taste. Plus, more of the dietary fiber and protein you want with no compromise. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout.
You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello everyone, you are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and again, Brittany will be joining me today to break down the latest Lori Vallow news. To say that a lot has happened over the course of the last few days would be a massive understatement. Thank you for your patience. I know that episodes typically should be coming out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Unfortunately, due to the massive amount of information that has been dropped, we needed a couple extra days to read and research. So before we get into it, let's just get our quick housekeeping out of the way. You can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com. You can find us at WeSawTheDevil across all social media outlets. And if you are interested in financially backing the show and getting a variety of cool benefits and perks in return, check out our Patreon. That's patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. And speaking directly to our patrons, guys, we will be doing a live next week talking about the Lori Vallow case. We will talk about all of the new information that's come out and just basically have a good old group chat. I will be posting the information and details for that shortly. And as always, if you're liking the show and haven't subscribed, please do so, so you can stay up to date on the latest Vallow case, as well as both solved and unsolved true crime cases. Leaving a 5-star review is absolutely the most important thing that you can do for your favorite podcast. So please consider taking a moment and leaving a review. Let's talk Lori Vallow. So Brittany, thanks for coming on again. How's it been going?
Dude, I've just been hanging out. Nothing much. What have you been up to lately?
Nothing much. I mean, everything is really quiet and boring.
I know. It's like nothing's happening with this case and I'm just sitting here just twiddling my thumbs.
I know. Well, we both know that's not true. And first of all, you have no thumbs to twiddle. But, but there's been a lot of movement over the last week. So much, in fact, guys, that I actually had to put off Tuesday's episode and bring it out today because we have been researching nonstop.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not even kidding. So we have been reading, taking notes and doing a whole bunch of other cool stuff with this information. I mean, is it a stretch to say that we've been putting in like 10 hours on this a day? Like just, I think we've been working like 10-hour days the last few days.
Yeah, I would not call that a stretch at all. For this episode in preparation, everyone knows when you podcast, you write outlines and whatnot. And Brittany was shocked when I sent her the outline for this series of episodes. She was like, oh no.
Guys, I'm going to tell you something right now that Robin's going to be embarrassed about, and it's fine. Robin insists on APA format with things, and so she's got so many lists of, like, things with Roman numerals. It looks like I'm, like, looking at the Super Bowls of all time. Like, it's just, like, this long list, and you know how you never know what number of Super Bowl it is? It's that, but in note form right here.
It's true. We got a lot going on. AP format for life.
Okay. No. But yeah. So basically what's been happening is Nate Eaton, Justin Lum, and then a couple different, like, you know, Facebook groups, Reddit, people have been trying to make sense of all of these document dumps. Like, Justin Lum and Nate Eaton have been giving us dumps of documents over the last few days, almost a full week. We're not quite there yet. Almost a year ago, they filed a request to have all the documents from everyone submitted, and it's starting to trickle into them. And then they decided the best way to release it to us is yelling at us over screenshots of their notes applications and then bukkakeing information all over our faces.
It's so true. Guys, I really sincerely appreciate Nate Eaton and Justin Lum's attention to this, their devotion to this case. But their, like, FOIA requests came back with over 2,500 documents. And most of these are actually emails between investigators and, you know, Chandler, Gilbert in Arizona. As they are coming in and as they were reviewing, as their teams are reviewing them, like Brittany just said, they are just bukkakeing everything all over the place.
We wanted to clean this up, right? These guys are coming in and they're just dumping on us. And we wanted to add a little bit of organization to this chaos. So Robin had the great idea of delegating that to me.
I did. So
here's what we have for you guys. At this point, it's going to be an entirely public tool. We did this out of the kindness of our hearts, and we have created a database that's actually nice. It actually works. It's not this, you know, imager album. It's not a spreadsheet. It's not this bulleted list that gets forgotten about on East Idaho News. No, guys, we did something beautiful for you. Here's what we have. We have a filterable tool on the website where you can go and you can see everything in chronological order. You can filter by the person or people involved. So if you want to see every single time that Alex and Lori crossed paths, select their names in this tool, and you get to see the events related to them.
And you can even see by state.
Which is so helpful. With all these document dumps, we've now learned that there's actually more locations in the mix. We're going to be talking about that in this episode here. I believe that's, Robin, correct me if I'm wrong, if that's bullet number XXXL2. We built this because it's a mess otherwise, and we know you guys are busy. We wanted to take it on ourselves to not just read everything, but put it in a format that you can come back to at a time that makes sense for you, have a couple glasses of red wine, start filtering, and catch up on the documents and the new details in the order that they happened, not this insane mess that we're getting from everywhere else. So check it out and feel free to contribute. We actually have a form that's there. So if you think we're missing something or we need to add to something, or if there's a new document that comes out, we haven't gotten to it yet, feel free to jump in. There's a form you can click on, put your name, your contact info, the title of the event, the date of it, and list a source or two so we can kind of double check things. We want to make sure everything's accurate, but help us out. Build this with us and let's make a tool that actually is easy to use for everyone.
Yeah, it's going to be a living and breathing tool. It is a work in progress currently. Brittany has slaved away and has a really, really, really great start on it. And there is a lot more to add. So please feel free to engage with us, submit different incidents and pieces of documents or the story. And she did an amazing job, as she said. And
thanks.
Yeah, fam. Because you can literally filter by anything. If you want to say, okay, when was Melanie Gibb in Idaho? When did she go to Utah? When did she go to Idaho? When did she and Lori together go to Utah? You will be able to use the filters and sort by chronological order, either newest events or actually oldest events in both ways. So it is going to be an invaluable tool to stay up to date on the case and see things as they happen. Because I don't know about you, but this document dump this week, it's been really confusing. And something that Brittany and I have discussed is drops from like one source, one news agency won't have dates or names or any context whatsoever. And then, you know, the next day, another news source will actually put it in place. add the names, the dates, and whatnot. It's all been very, very, very confusing, and also trying to keep a straight timeline of events as they happened has been really difficult. So we hope that this will be a great community-wide tool to keep people in the know and be a really easy top-down view of this case.
Right. So another thing that's really helpful with this is there is a search tool where you can actually type in keywords. So you're welcome to type in names if you're trying to look for details like raccoon or text or things like that. Not only have we added these events, we've added in-depth descriptions so that in addition to finding out when something happened, you can find out the details related to it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're really excited. And again, kudos to Brittany for building this. And again, we want your help. We want community help on getting this to be the most comprehensive, largest database available.
Robin, I'm so proud of you. The first step is admitting you need help. This was great. Guys, thank you. Round of applause for Robin really quick. Yes.
Finger snaps. All right, guys, so let's just go ahead and get into it. And again, this is just going to be kind of just a wide variety, nothing in order, just a lot of the new facts that we have learned from these document dumps. A lot people have wondered how much money Lori Vallow was making after Charles's death, after Joseph Ryan's death. How was Lori living at the level that she was? Well, it did come out that the Rexburg Police Department believed that Lori Vallow was receiving $4,800 a month for taking care of JJ due to his disabilities, due to autism and whatnot. And that's just for JJ. I double checked, and that's actually just for JJ. They also believed that she was making an almost $4,000 off of Tylee for her survivor benefits for the death of, obviously, Joseph Ryan. That meant that Lori Vallow's monthly income was almost $8,000 a month.
Yeah, this is insane to me. And going back to yet another document dump, that number, that $8,000 a month, is something Kay Woodcock didn't even know it was that. She has this email that she was sending to one of the detectives in Rexburg going, hey, I'm worried because two different people have said she doesn't want JJ. And unless her boyfriend's got deep pockets, she's not able to support him on $1,600 a month if I have the life insurance.
Yep.
So even Kay thought that Lori was struggling. I don't think anyone realized how much money this woman was pulling in.
She was pulling in a lot of money, and it's just absolutely mind-blowing to think that. And then on top of it, Charles Vallow was paying for, you know, the house, was renting the house.
Right.
Right? He was paying for the house. It sounds like Lori got in touch with like social services or social programs in Arizona and got that for JJ. And then obviously Tylee started having her card, her survivor benefit. She was pulling in a mountain of money each month.
One thing I want to bring up with this is a lot of people think and say that the big fuel in all of this, I mean, this entire crime ring was money. It was greed. But in my opinion, this goes to show it wasn't about money for Lori. She had money already. So Tammy dying and the life insurance money there, or the claims of Melanie Boudreau needing to kill Brandon so they could have his life insurance money to fund the group. There's been a lot of conspiracy theories basically surrounding what was the motive. Was it money? If my one little thing in all of this that I've learned so far is I think we can remove money from the table as being the primary driving factor in the different crimes that were committed here.
I completely agree. I think that money now, for me, initially it was the chief motivator in my mind for all these crimes to have been committed. I think that we can safely take that off the table now. Lori was making $8,000 a month, guys. She did not need to kill these people to get that much more additional money. I mean, and don't forget, Kay Woodcock got the Charles's life insurance policy, and she was still bringing home $8,000 a month. So yeah. I concur fully. I think we can take that as the motivation off the table.
Yeah, I really think so. So another item in the list, again, this isn't necessarily in an order of any kind, but thank you, Justin Lum and Nate Eaton, for making that possible for us. The other thing that kind of stood out was Charles reaching out to Brandon and basically telling Brandon, hey, keep Melanie away from Lori. She's crazy. She's insane. Like, heads up. Don't let this happen. Now, If you guys remember, Melanie surprised Brandon with wanting a divorce back in June of 2019. And so for Charles to reach out when he did, I mean, this is where he's basically kind of kissed the idea goodbye that anything was going to get better with Lori. Like, it broke my heart. But seeing that letter that he sent her, the email he sent her, I don't know if you guys read that. Did you read that, Robin?
I did. It was heartbreaking.
Ugh. Gosh, that one got me so good. I choked up a few times, actually, because you could read the devastation in this, where he's like, holy cow, like, she's gone. She's okay not talking to me. She's okay not talking to JJ. And now I have to appeal to her as a human being at this point to see if there's anything there that she can at least agree to be part of our lives. Like, this kid doesn't know any different. Will you at least be kind as a human being if you don't want to be his mom? Like, that was insane. And so for him to reach out to Brandon and say, I'm broken, I don't want you to break too, and while I still love Lori and I want to try and make things work, hopefully you can save yourself the heartbreak and keep Melanie away from my wife. Insane to me.
No, it absolutely is. And as everyone knows, it did not work. Melanie and Lori spent a considerable amount of time together. And as Brittany said, Melanie surprised Brandon out of nowhere with the request for the divorce. And then after she requested the divorce, she cut Brandon off entirely.
Hello, it is Ryan. And I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. She refused to speak to him again. And they actually went and utilized a court mediator for the divorce in full. You know, a lot of people will come together or just like on their own discuss, okay, well, this is what we're doing with our accounts. When do you want to take the kids? Not the case for Melanie. Melanie went so hardcore, cut him completely off, and they utilized a mediator to discuss splitting their finances, the kids, custody, the sale of the properties and the houses that they had. Everyone knows Brandon was worth quite a bit of money. He was very successful. And that was it. Melanie was just out. Just one day, boom, divorce and gone.
Yeah. Insane. Mm-hmm. Insane. I think it's interesting how, as we read these different documents, these people that have kind of fallen off on the wayside, Melanie Pawlowski / Boudreaux, Brandon Boudreaux, Zulema Pastenez, we're starting to see a lot more information come out about these people that we didn't forget about them, but I think they were hoping we had. Mm-hmm. And these documents are definitely not going to let that happen. We are learning so much about Melanie. We are learning so much about the involvement of all of these people on the outside. I know excited's not the right word, but I am looking forward to seeing more information come out. So these people who have kind of been in hiding, they don't get to be under their rock anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I guess just kind of like segueing off into that, if you guys follow, and if you don't, I suggest that you do. If you're on Facebook, following True Crime Underground has an amazing, amazing, amazing Lori Vallow Facebook page, a Facebook group where they discuss this case just in every nook and cranny, every detail. And they just published the full call between Sherry Doddle and Melanie Gibb.
Oh my gosh. It is so good, guys.
It is so good. We're going to talk about this more in depth later, but Brittany, do you want to give kind of just like a really quick synopsis?
Absolute. Yes. Absolute hat tip to Carl Danger and friends, because not only is this call incredible, but there's a lot of like drama behind it and all that. So for them to post this and just two middle fingers like, no, this is what happened. I love it. If you guys don't already follow True Crime Underground, go and like their page, follow them. They've got lots of great information and it's actually hilarious. People are really funny with different comments and just, I don't know, I can spend like hours in there. But the call. So Melanie Gibb is a two-faced bitch. That's the synopsis. Melanie Gibb is a completely different person for her sweet, sensitive, grape-fondling, Nate Eaton interview. And then in this call, where she thinks it's just her and a friend. She has no idea she's being recorded. We get the real Melanie.
It's not a pretty
picture. And the reason I say that, you get this cold, calculating woman that is almost indifferent about the lives of actual human beings. It's just awful, guys. Like, I listened to it. I listened to a clip of it at least a month ago, maybe longer ago. I don't remember. But the full one I listened to 3 times last night, and I'm going to listen to it again and compare that to the Nate Eaton interview and find the exact lies that are there, and I'll grab the little blips and quotes. But Melanie lied a lot of times, mm-hmm. a lot of them. Her saying that, you know, she wasn't entirely sure, like, you know, didn't really understand the belief system, and her little soft voice about things is gone in this phone call. She laughs things off, and she'll even say things like, oh, just wait. Like, almost as if you're, like, dishing to, like, your hairstylist. Like, you won't believe the shit I heard here.
Yep.
It's awful. I'm so glad, because she's a terrible person. And Nate Eaton and everyone else just painted her out to be this person that, like, if it wasn't for Melanie Gibb, we wouldn't have the charges, we wouldn't have this. And that's bullshit. When we see these documents now, law enforcement was on top of things and aware of really large red flags clear back in August of 2019. Mm-hmm. They were aware of things before either Tylee or JJ had been murdered, before mm-hmm. Tammy had been murdered. They were watching what was happening. They had surveillance on people. We need to give law enforcement definitely more credit, mm-hmm. and we need to give Melanie Gibb way less. Go listen to the full call at True Crime Underground and let us know what you think.
Yeah, and I would like to once again, we have gotten so much slack on this show for a year and a half now because I have maintained that Melanie Gibb is a liar and not a good person and that she has been hiding something sinister. And we have gotten so much negative feedback to that. And again, I think that... Brittany, I think you were on here again when we finally could do our victory lap on this. But after you hear this phone call with Melanie Gibb and just how cold, heartless, and calculating she is, I think that finally, I think most people will see her for what she actually is. And I think that she Agreed. Should be terrified that she does not have an immunity deal, because I think that she is actually going to see her day in court one day.
I freaking hope so. The other thing that's kind of fun, if you guys think back to the Nate Eaton interview, he's like, we've been looking for you. You've been in hiding. And she's like, yeah. guess where she was? She was with David Warwick the entire time. And she calls it that he was ministering unto her. And mm-hmm. I laughed so hard.
He was, just not in the way that she was trying to act.
Anyway, she wasn't in hiding. She was just receiving some really... really good spiritual guidance.
One-on-one
with, it's like this like shoulder brush. You can like hear it in her voice. She's like telling Sherry, like, I don't know if you've heard, but, David's my boyfriend. It's like, oh, snap, Melanie. Yeah. Get it.
So yeah, again, True Crime Underground, listen to the call, and we will be discussing that more in depth on a future episode, but there's just so much to get through, guys. That's just going to have to be sidelined and tabled for now.
Let's do it.
So another piece that people are finding a great deal of interest in, it was an audio recording. An investigator actually found an audio recording on Lori's cell phone titled Lori's Testimony. And apparently in this recording, Lori is literally like self-prophesying and saying everything that she does is because her, quote, heavenly father tells her. This is the first point in any documentation or any reporting that I've seen where they use the phrase, the investigator uses the phrase, religious cult. And the email said, to another investigator said, quote, I did find this audio on Lori's phone. It's titled Lori's Testimony. There is a modification date of February 25th, 2019. Then there's a redacted sentence. Listening to her testimony, she is self-prophesying and everything she does is because her heavenly father tells her. Enjoy the listening will really help to understand her thinking.
I loved all of the emails that we've been going through. I'm sure you guys have seen a couple of the little screenshots. Again, True Crime Underground has a lot of them. I've seen a lot on Reddit. Justin Lum and Nate Eaton, I don't think have been doing great with showing actual screenshots. So I'm bummed about that. But this particular screenshot that shows the interaction is great. You're going to see a lot of the personality of these different agents. My favorite is when they say, like, all right, I'm clocking out now. Like, they are so tired of all of this. I feel so bad for law enforcement.
I do too. And then some of them will have like really great one-liners, you know, because they're all of them are like, WTF. What is this? This is crazy. Yeah.
Because I imagine what happened is they assigned different departments, like, enjoy, you're in charge of all of the phones. Tell us everything you found. And you see, you start picking up on these different like interactions between law enforcement, you know, like FBI to Rexburg PD or Chandler PD to also FBI. And you'll see like Gilbert Police to Chandler. And I want to say that you can almost sense a camaraderie of devastation in this really ironic way, because they're all like, there's these like, yeah, enjoy the listening, like have fun with this one. Like, they're just like, this is bananas.
Yeah. You mentioned phones. So let's talk about phones just for a moment. We also see repeatedly in these documents that investigators now actually, like, they were referring to burners even back then. Mm-hmm. They knew that all of these people had burner phones.
They knew in August of 2019, from what we can see so far, it could even be further back than that, because we're still getting dumps, guys. This episode right now that you're listening to in this moment is probably already somewhat outdated, because there's been at least 5 more dumps of stuff from the various reporters or whoever else has had these things come to light. Keep that in mind. Like, that's why we have this timeline. We're going to keep adding to the timeline tool on our website. But law enforcement, as far as we know at this point, they were looking at phone records of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell on these burner phones in August of 2019.
And apparently they had different area codes that they would use too, because they would refer to, say, Lori's 480 number, Chad Daybell's, you know, XYZ number. He had a Utah area code on one. So they would refer to these people, Lori, Alex, Chad, I think Melanie Gibb was one. I mean, they've started referring to people via the area code of their burner phone. So it sounds like they just utilize a lot of different area codes too.
So they knew who Chad Daybell was. They knew at least about 2 different burner phones. And they knew that in less than 1 month of Charles Vallow being shot and killed by Alex. In less than 1 month, the FBI was aware of burner phones, communications, and they had identified multiple different burner phones in less than a month. Mm-hmm. So for everyone who's like, why don't we have charges? Why don't we have this? Give law enforcement way more credit. They were on top of things, I think, earlier than anyone could have pictured.
Except for Chandler PD. Fuck them.
Yeah, okay.
They're the only ones on this entire board that get no sympathy or appreciation from me, because I think that we would have a lot more people alive and with us had those people actually done their jobs.
I will not fight you on this one. I can see why.
Yeah. And then one of the most recent dumps last night was actually, and this is one of my favorite pieces, and I read each document like 12 times. We have the summary of the interviews with Alex, Lori, and Tylee. And this all took place, as everyone knows, on July 11th. Yeah, it was just really, really interesting to me, in particular, Tylee's. She was described as completely calm. She described the entire ordeal. Charles Vallow was angry. All 3 of them actually made it look like Charles Vallow was Godzilla, who came in and just
came unhinged.
Yeah, like completely unraveled. And Tylee said that she grabbed a bat and she went out into the end of her hallway, like from her bedroom. And Charles was in there screaming and he tried to take the bat from her. I mean, it was just the way that they described Tylee as just being so calm. You could just feel in Tylee's interview that she was trying to protect her mom. Like everything that Tylee said she did was, I didn't want him to hurt my mom. I didn't want him to hurt my mom. One of my big questions in this case is, did Lori coach Tylee on what to say? Like, did they all come together in the 43 minutes that it took Alex to call 911?
We know for sure that they did go specifically to Burger King to get JJ chicken fries and Sprite. That was like, for whatever reason, the breakfast that Lori felt that he needed to have in that moment. So they went there, they went and bought flip-flops, and some of these document dumps do show the receipts basically that are referenced. So we know that they had some time in the car together. And I would assume that some conversations went down during that period of time. But yeah, 43 minutes worth of time lapse between Charles being shot, Alex calling the police, waiting for them to come. I mean, we're talking, I'd say, at least an hour and a half before Lori and Tylee had to be back on scene.
And correct me if I'm wrong, too, but Charles Vallow was actually still alive after being shot.
He was. And the really sad thing was Alex said on the phone that he would try CPR, he would try doing chest compressions. And in some of these document dumps, the first responder said, well, clearly that wasn't the case, because if that had happened, there would just be pools of blood underneath Charles from the chest compressions. Alex did literally nothing. That was sad. So
it's actually poetic justice in a way, because when Alex died covered in his own shit in his bathroom, and Zulema Pestin is his son, is like, nope, I'm good. I'm good on the CPR. I'm good.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. You're so right.
So it's actually a little poetic justice there. Oh, I mean, goodness. If there is any, you know.
Thank goodness. That actually made me feel better. I don't know what that says about me, but like, I feel at peace with that. Yeah, I do. Anyways, so going back to the interviews, the other thing that was interesting about Tylee's is every single time the officer in the interview room asked her, so what was Charles yelling about? What was your mom yelling about? What was Alex saying? Tylee's response every single time was, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I just remember yelling. I don't know what was said. Mm-hmm. But my mom wasn't yelling. Charles was, but my mom was just talking calmly. And it's like, come on. So they didn't push back on that at all, which I get why. She was a minor at the time. Come on. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she had to have heard a word, a trigger, like something. They didn't push. They didn't push for more information. They were entirely okay with her being like calm and in complete.
Yeah, I don't know. And you can assume that maybe she was in shock or something, but like, she could have heard a single word. All she did say is that Charles said, give me the bat, or put the bat down, or don't you hit me. Don't you dare. I'll call the police. I'll put you in jail if you hit me with that bat. And I mean, that's literally all Tylee had for the entire, incident, is Charles telling her that he would put her in jail if she hit him. That was pretty much it. That's all she remembered. I definitely do not believe that.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
No. It seems like a stretch. I mean, to a degree. I don't know if we want to include this part, but some of the dumps do include information regarding how Charles may have been physical with Lori in the past. There were some redacted statements in past interactions between Lori and Charles, mm-hmm. where it seems like Charles may have been physically abusive, mm-hmm. not just with Lori, but possibly with Tylee. I'm not saying that a bat wasn't involved. I'm not saying that Charles didn't have a temper. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. I don't think we have an innocent party in Charles necessarily. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's entirely innocent in regards to, well, why would Tylee, a child, feel the need to keep a baseball bat in her room?
And I would like to state for the record, too, is that I try to be as realistic as possible, even if it pisses people off or makes them uncomfortable. The sad state of affairs here, guys, and I see a lot of people saying, oh, Charles is an angel and Charles is an angel. Here's the thing. No one's an angel. People and humans are complex. We do know from multiple sources that Charles Vallow did have a temper, that he was at times physically abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that doesn't mean that he should have been murdered, okay? Like, I would like to put that thought front and center. And apparently he was a massive womanizer, so it is actually probable that he was, you know, cheating on Lori multiple times in his trips away. Again, that's speculation, but it's likely considering past behaviors. And that doesn't mean that he should be murdered, but like the man, you know, could have in fact come into that home like a bat out of hell. You know what I mean?
For our listeners who don't have daddy issues, first of all, congrats. But also, you know, think about like your own upbringing. Wouldn't it have been weird for you to have a bat in your room? Like, why would you need to be scared enough to keep a weapon of sorts for protection? In Tylee's interview with police, she straight up says she always had that in there because she always felt a little bit more safe knowing she had something there to protect herself.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something, in my opinion, that you can coach someone to say when they're asked, like, why did you have a bat? And their instant reaction is like, I need it.
Like, yeah.
That there is something there. I don't feel like that was a coach statement. Mm-mm. I don't know what to make of it. I entirely agree. No one deserved to be murdered. And I think it's fair to say, too, that even law enforcement felt that Alex entirely overreacted. Over and over and over again, they grill Alex on it. Did Charles wind up to hit you? Did he actually do that? Were you on the ground when he was beating you with a bat? And he's like, well, you know, no. He got in the way and then he like started walking towards me. And so that's when I went and got the gun. And they're like, well, why would you? He didn't hit you, though. Well, I mean, yeah, he like shoved me. And then there was like, Alex was trying so hard to come up with justification for why a gun even entered the room. And the police were really trying to figure that out as well.
And Tylee said that Charles had Alex on the ground hitting him with a bat in her testimony.
Yep. There were so many different, like, when you read Alex, Lori, and Tylee, their different versions of what happened, and they made Alex draw a floor plan to explain things better. And there's like this note at the end where the officer's like, doesn't add up, but you know.
Oh well.
Oh well.
That's why, you know, I do feel terrible for Charles, because I have no doubt in my mind that he did love Lori. He was trying to keep his family together. I mean, look at everything. If I were him, I would have been rip shit livid and frustrated as well with everything that she had put him through, screwing over his business, stealing all of his money, stealing his car. At that point, he knew that she was crazy, more or less, as far as with the religious zealotry and nuttiness and everything else that she was doing. So I just like, I don't blame him for being frustrated. And I feel like had the Chandler Police Department done their due diligence, they had those three separate interviews with three separate stories. There were so many holes, you could have driven a semi-truck through them in their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, waiting the 43 minutes to call 911, very clear he didn't do CPR. I mean, he lied to the cop right then. In Alex's interview, he said, yes, I did chest compressions and CPR. He had not a drop of blood on him. And yeah, I mean, it's just the Chandler Police Department failed so, 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 so terribly in this.
Yeah, they really did. And, you know, you think about this too. Chandler PD, only in 2021 did they come out and say, you know what? Yeah, he was murdered. This is wrong. That happened back in 2019. You know, FBI was all over this in August of 2019, looking at how weird it was for Lori to have all these weird calls going to a 208 number.
Mm-hmm.
And all this involvement. And Chandler PD sat around, in my opinion, for far too long before saying, yeah, this was wrong. Things didn't add up. This is a homicide.
Yeah. And I am all for police accountability. I am all for them being taken to task in crimes that, you know, officers commit or shootings or whatever. Likewise, simultaneously, I like to give credit where credit is due. And the Chandler Police Department possibly, very, very, very possibly, had they investigated Charles Vallow's death as a murder initially, there would be probably a host of people still alive today. It is my absolute sincere belief that we would maybe not have two dead children.
I agree. Kay was on top of this at the same time. Kay Woodcock, she was all over trying to get in touch with Lori within, I mean, weeks of Charles being shot. She wanted JJ. She wanted him to come hang out, come stay with her. She wanted to have time with him because she had heard so many times that Lori was overwhelmed and that she wasn't doing well. Mm-hmm. And she knew that Lori had straight up abandoned JJ and Charles for months.
49 so, days.
Yeah. If Chandler PD had done their job, Kay wouldn't have had to fight nearly as hard to do what she had to do to get Rexburg involved. Like, I definitely agree that we would have more people alive.
The sum of the internet, you know, all the people involved in this case, like armchair sleuths like us, basically, can read these interviews on our own with no formal criminal justice training and be like, whoa, those are different stories and no one's on the same page. I just feel like maybe detectives should have been able to do that.
Bro.
A little bit faster.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, every single one of these documents I'm going through, guys, this isn't a joke. The other night, Robin and I were going through some of these different documents and we're trying to figure out, like, okay, based on the redacted mark here on this document, we think it might be this person's name. Let's draw it out. I'm drawing like stick figures and diagrams trying to figure this out. And we have answers. I mean, that Chandler PD couldn't figure out. Like, what? That's not right. Mm-mm. Robin and I should not be able to know this information. This is ridiculous.
That's it. We need our own sitcom.
That's it.
Yeah. And this is something that I've thought about a lot on trying to place like motivation behind is mm-hmm. investigators claim that between July 14th of 2019 and July 19th, so we're talking about a 5-day time span, after he killed Charles Vallow, Alex took a trip to Colombia, like the country of Colombia. And no one knows why he went, but people do know, they do know now that he also went multiple times between 2015 and 2018, and then also wired money to people in Colombia 3 separate times. So what is Alex Cox's yeah. connection, guys, to Colombia in particular? And it's not Zulema, because Zulema is not from Colombia.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it, but generally speaking, wiring money and visiting foreign countries 3 days after you murder someone doesn't look great on paper.
There is a woman who stepped forward, I believe that she was a translator, and said that she slept with Alex in Colombia. But I just find it really hard to believe that all of a sudden he met a woman, slept with her, and then just started wiring all this money and visiting more times. I mean, obviously it's possible, but I feel like there is some sinister, nefarious reason why Alex kept going to Colombia that we are not yet aware of.
We are digging into it. And we actually have an interesting person that we're going to be asking some questions to get a little bit more insight. So stay tuned on that.
Has to deal, too, with, as everyone knows, Alex was a truck driver for a profession here in the United States. So we're going to try to move some puzzle pieces together and see if we can make them click.
I'm looking up right now. It's not entirely related, but it looks like Colombia does extradite. So was he dumb enough to, like, think that they wouldn't extradite him?
He clearly was not very bright.
You can Google it. Like, you can see that they will extradite your ass. Go to Brazil, homie.
Right.
Okay. All right, next one.
So something that really killed my soul and made me very, very upset is the news where Alex Cox killed dogs.
Oh, I know. Guys, I guess pretend we already gave you a trigger warning at the start of this episode.
Brittany had to give me a trigger warning when she sent me this news article.
It was bad. It's so sad. So Lori's sister-in-law, which we feel that that would be Nicole, which is
Zach Cox's mom and Adam Cox's wife.
So we think it's Nicole because this entire time, Adam and Zach Cox have been adamantly against Lori. They have been 100%, you know, saying Lori's insane, she's crazy, she's a criminal. And so it would make sense if the sister-in-law who, you know, was giving information about Lori, it would make sense if it were Nicole. No other sister-in-law really matches at this point. So we assume it's Nicole, but she reached out to detectives on August 8th. Now, again, go back to that timeline. Charles Vallow was murdered on July 11th. So on August 8th, right around the time that the FBI is now 100% aware of burner phones. They're tracking things. They've got surveillance on multiple different people at this point. Nicole, we believe, reached out to law enforcement and said, hey, by the way, here is everything Lori believes. Also, let me tell you about Alex Cox and how he literally will murder animals in the desert. Lori had two dogs that she just decided she didn't want them anymore. And it's reported that Alex took those and shot them or left them in the desert of Arizona. Just left them. And then there's an additional report that he shot and killed a separate family member's dog when they no longer wanted it.
This entire family is a bunch of fucking psychopaths.
I just want to throw this out there. To murder children, obviously, is horrendous. To murder animals is horrendous. Alex had zero issues hurting people. He tased Joe Ryan. He killed Charles Vallow. He most likely assisted in far more nefarious things. Didn't see this one coming, but it adds up.
Yeah.
Alex wasn't someone who thought twice when it came to killing something.
Not at all. And Nicole's email said, it's redacted, but again, as Brittany said, it has to be fitting the timeline. Nicole, you know, I'm married to Adam Cox, the brother of Alex Cox and sister Lori Vallow. I'm emailing in regards to what happened to my brother-in-law, Charles Vallow, and feel like you need to know what is really going on. Since this has all happened, the whole family on my husband's side has cut us out of their life, deleted us off of social media, and won't talk to us. So therefore, Mama Lori, Janice Cox, Summer Shiflet, the whole
family. Did you say Mama Lori?
Mama Lori. Oh, God, she scares me. That is what my sleep paralysis demon looks like in the middle of the night. The whole Melanie Plowski, everyone cut out Adam and Nicole and Zach. So she says they are mad that we know the truth and won't tell a lie. Lori and Alex both think they are immortal beings. Lori does a podcast and is a follower of Julie Rowe. This is like a cult. The last few months, she has been telling family members Charles's body has been overcome by a demon and it's not Charles and he needed to die. She told my son Zach this. Zach called my husband and I, both telling us how crazy she was becoming. She one day made up this lie and said Charles was cheating on her and she took his truck, clothes, cut off credit card, took all the money in the bank, left him stranded somewhere and he couldn't even fly home. He finally made it home and she left JJ with him and never came back for 58 days or called or text, nothing. She was just missing. She never talked to anyone in the family either, only Alex. She stayed at Alex's house, new house. To me, the big pickup from this, obviously, is that Janice Cox, Summer Shiflet, like the rest of the family, cut off their brother, right? Cut off Adam. Adam's always apparently kind of been like the outlier of the family because he seems normal. So Alex has always been the outlier. But after Charles Vallow was murdered, Charles Vallow was reaching out to Adam. Remember, they were going to have the big intervention on Lori and everything. So he cut off entirely. And then also that Lori Vallow is a follower of Julie Rowe. They didn't mention Chad Daybell, guys. They mentioned Julie Rowe.
I am so excited for Julie to come out with a video soon for all of her haters. If you, again, you guys aren't following True Crime Underground, follow them because you will see the best and greatest of Julie Rowe's hits, including shoulder shimmies via TikTok. You're going to see her calling for her followers to, quote, burn down the Mormon church. Mm-hmm. You will see her ask for violence.
Yep.
This is another person that, again, we kind of like,
don't forget the lizard people.
Fell off on the sides, mm-hmm. kind of lose a little bit of information on them. They're not the big players that are Chad and Lori, but Julie, I think, is going to be making a comeback soon and I'm here for it.
I'm very curious. We actually have this in our outline too. It's possible Julie Rowe may be more involved than we previously thought. But it's very, very interesting that Zach has basically pushed out that Lori's obsessed with Julie Rowe as a follower. I never thought that. I never knew that. I thought that Lori found Chad and that was it. So for them to mention Julie Rowe, that was like, yay, Christmas.
I am very excited to learn a little bit more about this. And I have to wonder, if we're going to start seeing maybe some transcripts or anything like that related to maybe some energy healing sessions. Mm-hmm. You know, in case we have a couple of new listeners, last year about this time, I also paid Julie Rowe for an energy session, an energy healing session. And yeah, I would genuinely love to see some transcripts or email correspondence between Julie Rowe and Lori Vallow, because if it's anything like what I experienced, it's going to be beautiful.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Life changing. Life affirming.
Life changing. Yeah, absolutely. August 9th. So let's go back in our little timeline tool. Guys, we're even using our own timeline tool because it's what makes this make sense. So Charles Vallow shot, killed on July 11th. On August 9th was the very first correspondence between Kay Woodcock, which is JJ's grandmother. We all know who Kay and Larry are. That was when she sent her initial email to detectives asking for the welfare check on JJ. Mm-hmm. And she cites multiple instances of Lori not texting back, not calling back. And in a lot of the document dumps, we actually even have screenshots of Kay and Lori's text messages back and forth to each other.
Yeah, that was interesting to see.
Kay is... She definitely was riding that line, I can see that, of being persistent and trying to negotiate with a terrorist.
Yep.
Her text messages were so, like, you can tell she put a lot of thought into how she worded things to help Lori see, hey, this works for you too. Send JJ to me. I know you're busy. I know you're trying to get settled in a new place. Let me just take JJ and I'll fly him right back out to you when you're all settled. It's a win-win. Like, let's do this. That's where Kay was at on August 9th. So think back again, July 11th to August 9th. Weeks go by after Charles is shot and killed and she's not hearing from Lori. She's not getting texts. She's not able to FaceTime JJ. They don't come to the memorial service for Charles.
Nope.
So
Lori says that he just won't understand and it'll make it worse.
Yeah, it's really hard. Sorry. Like, it's just like, what in the world? But again, give credit to where credit's due. Kay Woodcock wasn't just on top of things. I didn't realize that she had reached out as early as August 9th.
Yeah.
I did not know the date on that. Mm-mm. I wish I could, like, give her a hug. You know, like, she tried so hard. And I have to wonder if she's had moments of, like, should I have pushed harder? I highly doubt she would ever hear this, but like everything I've seen about Kay, I don't think you could look for a more dedicated, not just caretaker, not just grandmother, but really like that's the most motherly person that ever existed in JJ's life.
Mm-hmm.
She went above and beyond constantly for him. I really hope that she finds peace knowing that she acted with more intention and more purpose than an entire police department in Arizona.
They actually contacted Kay and said, hey, do you know JJ's medical history, his medication history? And Kay actually had a photocopy of JJ's medication that he was supposed to be on. And that's actually how they confirmed that. Hard same on Kay.
Name another grandma that's like, absolutely, I know my grandson's medication list. Like, I love my grandma. My grandma's one of my best friends. And I don't think she would be able to know that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, really... For Kay to get painted as just JJ's grandmother I've completely shifted how I see her in her role in JJ's life. These document dumps make it so clear. This was the most motherly person that ever existed in his life.
So that was on August 9th. And then we have just a little tiny bit less than a month later. Lori had just moved to Rexburg and she emailed Life Academy, which was JJ's school back in Arizona, and said that she was offered a job out of state and had to move quickly and that JJ wouldn't be coming back. Also, police and investigators, they did release heavily redacted school records for JJ from Life Academy. When I say redacted, I'm talking about it's a page and every single thing is black on it. Nothing really to...
Yeah, not much.
Not much to discuss or go off of there.
One quick thing there on September 5th, around that timeline where Lori emails the school. Mm-hmm. It's not too long after that where Life Academy, some of the document dumps actually show their correspondence internally between educators and staff.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can see Lori logging in and they're like, is this bitch seriously just like looking at his stuff? Okay, they didn't say that exactly. I'm paraphrasing with my edge. But it shows their correspondence internally of them going, can you believe this woman? What is happening right now?
There is just a sea of red flags everywhere Lori goes.
Yeah, basically. But you're right. So September 5th, we're coming up on that timeline of the last known time that we've seen Tylee. Just for reference for anyone that has been following this timeline, or again, if you're not sure, go to the website. WeSawTheDevil.com, and you're going to see the timeline there. You can click on it. Yellowstone's visit was September 8th.
Yes.
Just for context, after September 8th, there's a photo in Lori's iCloud account. Lori's iCloud has been this treasure trove, by the way, guys. I don't think she knew what iCloud was. If you don't know what iCloud is, probably try and avoid committing crimes. That's probably a good rule of thumb for you. But Lori has lots of photos, very damning things in there for her. And one of them is JJ at Yellowstone Bear World. It's in Rexburg. It's actually not technically in Rexburg. It's like in between Rigby and Rexburg. If you're in Idaho or if you're planning on going to Yellowstone one day, let me just spoil this. It has nothing to do with this podcast. Yellowstone National Park is lame. It's so lame. Go to Bear World. You drive in your car and bears like put their faces on your windows and like they put their paws all over and they like steam it up and they're right there and you can like play with baby bear cubs. It's the best. Go to Bear World.
And they did. And
they did.
They did. And on September 14th, there was a picture of JJ sitting basically in a ride in a seat from Yellowstone Bear World.
That's right. And that's September 14th. So going along that same exact timeline, that is just a couple days after Chad and Tammy's raccoon text. So we can assume that, you know, this is after possibly Tylee has been murdered at this point. But it's before Melanie and David Warwick come to Rexburg. So it's right. this weird in between where they were like, what are we going to do now that we've murdered a child? Let's go to this fun family outing and let's go to Bear World. So I don't know why that creeps me out so much that they were planning like family activities in between these things. Yeah. It almost makes it more sinister.
It does. It makes it so much more disturbing.
Yeah. I don't know why, but like it like really creeps me out that they were trying to like be normal in between these things.
I mean, this is really disgusting and awful to think about and talk about, but they likely killed Tylee on what, the 8th, possibly the 9th.
Yeah.
Why didn't they also kill JJ on the same day?
I don't understand that myself. I actually think one of the reasons that JJ was allowed to stick around a little bit longer, I think it was probably because Melanie and David were coming up and they wanted to try and get away with things a little longer. Because again, remember that Lori and Chad actually thought the world was going to end. I kind of forgot about that piece of it, mm-hmm. but they were like flirting with these weird timelines of their own. And so I think they were just trying to like drag things out as long as possible until the end of the world came. And they needed Melanie Gibb and David Warwick to have eyes on JJ to see that he was alive so that they could get away with things a little bit longer. Again, speculation. I've proven myself to be an idiot on this podcast multiple times, so probably don't listen to me. The next thing in Lori's iCloud account that was related to JJ was September 22nd. So that actually changed our dates a little bit here. On September 22nd, the last time that we knew that JJ had been seen was actually before the 22nd. So our timeline shifted on the last known date of him because we have a picture of him that morning. Yeah. So in the past, we were like, oh no, like, did Alex take him to his apartment that night or what happened here? In this case, what we can assume is that interaction either Melanie lied about, which is possible, or the dates themselves have shifted because of this picture showing that he was alive that morning. So that photo was taken September 22nd around noon. Technically, it was at 11:46 a.m. Mm-hmm. And he was wearing the exact same red pajamas that, according to investigators who found his body, he was wearing also red pajamas then. So we believe that now his last known date that he was alive was September 22nd.
When I saw that picture from her iCloud, red pajamas, that's what we knew originally when they discovered JJ's body. Like, that actually choked me up.
Again, going back to like the cruelty of all of this, they're peppering in these like normal family things. You know, if you're a parent, you know, we take pictures of our kids constantly. I take pictures of my son all the time. I try and do like those little like spontaneous ones where like they don't know. And that's what I see here in this photo of JJ. He's sitting on the couch. He's playing with what looks like a cup and maybe like a stick or like a pencil or something. When you think about this, that means Lori took a photo of the son that she knew she was going to kill or have killed that same day. It completely blows your mind as a parent looking at that. Like, how can you in one hand go, oh, look how cute he is, and I'm going to take a picture and capture this so I have it forever. But then knowing full well, hours from now, this child isn't going to be alive.
I would be curious. I'm not sure if you know, the very first day, the first time that we hear that JJ has gone dark.
The first day that it's been reported was actually during that same visit. So like day one of Melanie Gibb and David Warwick coming to Rexburg for that podcast. Day one, Lori tells Melanie while they're walking around the track with Chad, he's a zombie. Look at him. You can tell. Now, Melanie's reaction then was she knew in her call with Sherry that most likely Tylee was dead. By the way, that's mm-hmm. another little fun fact. Melanie Gibb assumed that Tylee was dead.
Yep.
At that point, she thought that it wasn't that she was like worried for her or hadn't seen her and was curious. No. Melanie Gibb told Sherry, and this call happened forever ago, she thought that Tylee was dead in that moment when Lori hinted that Tylee wasn't around anymore.
Oh, she was like, oh, well.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, crazy. I knew, but, you know, just wait. Wait for more details. You wouldn't believe this, Sherry. Oh, girl, I hope you're sitting down. It was just gossip to her. It felt like Melanie was just like gossiping at this point. But that same conversation was when Lori said out loud to Melanie, I think JJ is a zombie and here are all the reasons. Mm-hmm. I believe that happened on September 20th. This photo of the last known photo of JJ was taken September 22nd.
All right, guys, we are going to end right here. Part two will actually be released tomorrow on Friday, and then the non-Valo episode, as I stated in the beginning, will be coming on Saturday. But there's a lot to process, and this is actually going to probably be a continuous series as far as breaking down documents as they come out. Again, over 2,500 emails, correspondence, notes from investigators have been published due to the Freedom of Information Act request from a variety of people, including Nate Eaton and Justin Lum. So we will continue going over these and breaking them down. But this is part one. Part two will be coming tomorrow. Again, thank you so much for listening. You can find us at wesawthedevil.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube even. You can find us everywhere under We Saw the Devil. If you are liking the show, loving it, please consider becoming a Patreon and financially backing it. You can do so for as little as $3 a month and get a wide variety of benefits and cool stuff, including merch, access to a private Facebook group. And speaking to our current patrons, we are doing a live next week. So I will be publishing the details on that. We're going to talk about the Lori Vallow case. If you want to come on, grab a seat, you can come on and talk to us. And it's going to be a fun time. So that's it for part one of this, guys. We're actually recording part two this evening, and then I'm going to have a fast turnaround to get it out because it seems like every time we post an episode, literally within minutes, more stuff comes down the pike. So we're going to wait till tonight, record it. I'm going to get it out late tonight, and hopefully we will continue to stay on top of it. Until next crime.